Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to SIS Limited Q3 FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vineet Toshniwal, President, M&A and Investor Relations from SIS Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to everyone, and I welcome you to the Q3 FY25 earnings call for SIS. I hope you've had a look at the results which were uploaded yesterday and the earnings note on the stock exchange and the company website as well. Now, let me start with some highlights. We've had a fantastic quarter. As you can see from the results, we've witnessed growth across all three segments of our business. On a consolidated basis, we have recorded a revenue of 3,363 crores, which is 9.4% on a year-on-year basis, highest-ever quarterly revenue. India Security has reported a revenue of 1,420 crores, which is, again, a 7.7% growth on a year-on-year basis. FM business has recorded a very robust growth, a quarterly revenue of 576 crores, which is 9.7% growth on a year-on-year basis. International Security has also recorded its highest-ever quarterly revenue of 1,383 crores. It's a growth of 11.1% on a year-on-year basis. So overall, all-round growth in all the three segments. Now, let's come to the earnings. It's been our constant endeavor to improve the margin profile across all three business segments, as we've been pointing out over the last few quarters. Our focus is on margin improvement, and it's showing results on a gradual basis. We focus on margin both in terms of customer contracts as well as rationalizing the SG&A costs. So on a consolidated basis, the EBITDA grew by 3.6% on a year-on-year basis. Now, it's 157 crores, and that results in EBITDA margin of 4.7%, which is up from 4.4% from the previous quarter. India Security has shown stable EBITDA margin of 5.5%, which has been the case for the last couple of quarters. Facility Management, we've been continuously guiding that our margins will be gradually improving, and it is showing results. We have an EBITDA of 4.6% now, which is 30 basis points higher on a year-on-year basis, gradually improving. Additionally, the segment has reported the highest-ever quarterly EBITDA of 26.5 crores, which is a 17.9%, almost 18% growth on a year-on-year basis. Now, coming to International Security business, where the last few quarters were of concern, I'm happy to report that the EBITDA margin for Q3 FY25 was 3.8%. It has also improved what was 3.3% in Q2 FY25, which is driven by a lot of new wins and high seasonal businesses, which has been traditionally the case in the last quarter. EBITDA now is on a path to recovery. From Q3 FY25, it is now at 53 crores, 19.5% growth on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Now, coming to operational efficiency, which is the net debt and the DSO, we're very happy to report that we have significantly reduced our net debt. It's down to 225 crores, down by 225 crores to 632 crores net debt, what was 857 crores in the previous quarter. This brings the net debt-to-EBITDA ratio down to 1.07 from 1.47, which was in the last quarter. This is the lowest level in the last 3 years, I would like to emphasize. Our OCF-to-EBITDA conversion remains robust. It's at 163%. Now, we've been working on efficient working capital management, bringing down DSOs. DSOs have improved by 4 days, down to 69 days from last December. highlighting our efficient working capital management, and this has released 150 crore rupees of working capital. Now, let's talk about our bank outsourcing business. We're again very happy to report that the business has achieved highest ever quarterly revenue of 182 crores, which translates to a growth of 12% on a year-on-year basis. Cash business expanded EBITDA by 15.5%, recording 17.1% as the EBITDA margin. PAT of 13 crores is a slight dip due to loss of benefits associated with carry-forward losses available in Q3 FY24. Q3 FY25 PAT was also impacted by lower ATJJ benefits. So overall, cash business momentum is on track, and we've been emphasizing we are trying to de-risk our business from ATMs, and the non-ATM business now contributes 84% of our top line, which was 80% in the previous quarter, thereby reducing our dependence further on ATMs. Our efforts to unlock shareholders' value in cash are underway, as we've reported in the last quarters also. Now, with this, I would like to take this opportunity to wish you all a great year, and let me now hand over the call to other participants also with me. There is Prithuraj, Group Managing Director, Mr. Brijesh, who is our Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. R.S. Murli Krishna, he is President, SIS International, and we are open for Q&A now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets only while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. I repeat, you may press star and one to ask a question. We have our first question from the line of Yash Tarak from RSPN Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead with the questions.
Yeah, the first question with regards to other income. The other income is inflated a lot. If you could please provide a clear breakup of the other income, line item wise.
Hello, yes, it is Brijesh. The breakup of other income is basically there are two major components. One is interest from fixed deposit, and another is this quarter we have received a significant amount of IT refund, and we have received interest from IT refund approximately 12.5 crore.
And there was a line item in regards to rupee denominated bond which were sort of given to Australian company, Australian subsidiary. If you could provide some color on that.
Actually, that RDB loan is sitting in the books of Indian company, its parent company SIS. This RDB loan has been taken, I think, in 2018. So whenever there is a fluctuation in exchange rate, we account for that in the PAT. So that is also resulting in some change in the PAT moment. And the amount is approximately 6 crore.
Okay, thanks. And my next question will be with regards to this. So in an analyst meet, Vinit sir had mentioned that we were going to probably sell some international businesses. So are we still looking to sell these international businesses, or how's it going?
Sorry, repeat again. What was the question? Selling the international.
So, selling or demerging the international business. In an analyst meet, I think we were discussing with regards to this that the international businesses were not probably doing so well. So are you going to keep these international businesses, or are you planning to sell them?
No, I don't think we have made any specific guidance with regard to this.
Okay.
Hi, this is Vituraj. Just clarify, the international businesses are an integral part of SIS's future plans, and as you see, the results have also been good. There is no plan to sell any part of the international business.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have our next question from the line of Narendra from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir, am I audible? Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So my first question is regarding growth, right? So do we expect the same kind of growth, you know, say 10% on a consolidated level going ahead, or do we see any improvement in the coming quarters or years, next couple of years? Yeah.
So, SIS believes that there is opportunity to grow at least 2x GDP in this type of business. And if you see our historical results, we have also, since listing, our CAGR for revenue is more than 15%. So,
okay.
Is 10% good enough? As per our estimates, the answer is no. We believe that we can grow faster. How much has SIS been growing in the past? Last 8 years or 7 years since listing, reported results will give you good direction. It's also there in the earnings note. Our Q on Q revenue growth is roughly 15%, and Q on Q profit EBITDA growth is roughly 16% since listing. So that's where we want to bring the business back at. If you look at this quarter also, compared to Q2, both international business and FM business have reported a 4% growth, which is in that ballpark range, in the 15% plus ballpark range. SIS Security in India has reported 2.5% growth compared to previous quarter. That is largely because some major contracts that were due to start in December got deferred in January. Having said that, you must also bear in mind that in our line of work in India, growth is a function of two variables, volume growth and price growth. Volume growth, we are reasonably satisfied with. Price growth is directly linked to minimum wage increase that the government determines. That is not in our hand. For the last few years, minimum wage growth in India during COVID and post-COVID has been rather subdued. We believe that with the upcoming labor code implementation, which the government is talking about, there may be change in that approach. Any change in labor code or minimum wage hike will have a direct corresponding impact on the business overall. Sorry for the long answer, but I have tried to give you perspective overall.
No, that was very helpful, sir. So to attain that 15%, is the wage hike necessary for attaining that 15%? Or once the wage hike comes, the growth would be more than a 15% CAGR over the long term?
Well, historically, pre-COVID, India, on average, we were seeing a minimum wage increase of roughly 8 to 9%. You know, I'm talking about 2010 to 2020.
Yeah.
Post-COVID, let's talk about the most recent year, the 9 months of this financial year. The minimum wage increase is closer to 3%. The remainder comes from volume growth.
Okay.
So you can do the math yourself. If this goes back anywhere near the pre-COVID levels of wage increase, then obviously the growth projections will change, because every single contract of SIS is minimum wage linked, and any increase in minimum wage is pro rata passed through without negotiation. is just a matter of changing the invoice and attaching the latest copy of the gazette notification.
Okay. 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 Understood, sir. And my second question is, do we expect any further write-offs in our receivables or goodwill going ahead? And when should we expect such kind of write-offs, if any?
I think quarter to quarter, the audit committee with the auditors reviews the status of all the aspects and takes a view. As of right now, there is no clear view or direction on that matter. Should this discussion come up, should the auditors feel that there is a requirement or the audit committee agrees, obviously we will notify, but as of now there is nothing.
Okay, okay, understood, sir. And the margins, we are at the 4.5-5% mark that we wanted to reach, if I'm not wrong. So are we happy with these kind of margins, or are we expecting further improvement coming up?
Well, I think I have stated this repeatedly over calls and with in interactions with investors and analysts. SIS believes that as a market leader, we have the pricing power to get to pre-COVID level of profitability. Pre-COVID, SIS security businesses in India were at and above 6% EBITDA mark. The FM business also was at and above 6% mark. The international business was 4.5%. So we believe that there is still some headroom before we can say that we are back at that level, and that is what we are striving for.
Okay, sir. So what would be the lever for that kind of growth and EBITDA margins, if you could explain?
Well, it's, you know, these businesses are like a bucket of contracts. So your direct cost, your direct contribution, what we call gross margin, is a function of the quality of contracts you carry in that bucket. In the middle, we had taken on certain contracts which were actually diluting the overall margin profile of the business. Some of those contracts have exited in security, so you see it at 5.5%. Same thing happened in FM. It took a little bit longer because there were government contracts and we could not exit, contracts with railways, etc., at the risk of getting blacklisted by government. So we have taken time to come out of these contracts. Large number of these contracts are out. We are also more judicious about taking on new contracts, which add incrementally, definitely not dilute the margin profile of the overall bucket. So that's one lever that's working. Second, as the revenue grows, obviously the SG&A will throw up operating leverage. And that is rather evident as growth becomes more rapid, you will see that the SG&A cost as a percentage obviously will decline. So that's happening. And the third and more important thing that we are doing is that as we prepare for our Vision 30, we have reset the scale of branches. So the revenue or the number of contracts or the number of employees we manage through a single branch, we are trying to increase that capacity by 1.3x. So same branch, let's say ballpark, used to handle 800 odd people, 900 people, will be able to manage 1,300 people. A branch could be, which was, managing 40, 50 accounts, will be doing 100 plus accounts. The revenue-wise, average size of branch, which was sub 2 crores, we are hoping that we can push it towards 3 crore plus per branch. So these things are happening through complete overhaul of our IT systems. So, SIS implemented and complete self-developed, homegrown, proprietary attendance system, digital attendance system called MySIS, which is now rolled out to a major part of the business, that cuts a lot of back office time, that increases efficiency hugely. We are already in stage of, again, implementing a second IT software called SIS Core, which is a contract management platform, again, built for purpose, which will help scaling. We are in the process of rolling out the next version of SalesMax, again, a proprietary platform, which is now synced to the upcoming labor reforms. So there's a lot of things that are happening at the back end over the last almost 4 quarters or more, which are approaching fruition. So that will also add to the operating leverage.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that answer, sir. So the capex for all this IT that you are spending on, is it over or are we looking at significant capex?
We don't capitalize these IT expenses. These are all developmental expenses and they're all revenue expensed.
Okay, great, sir. Thank you so much and all the best. I'll fall back in queue if I have any questions. Yeah.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Chirag from Keynote Capitals. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. First, I would like to take some questions which were taken from the earlier participants. One was when you have said that the bifurcation of other income was related to interest on fixed deposit, interest on refunds from IT and some interest on IT refunds. Could you bifurcate what was the chunk from IT refund and interest from IT refund?
So in India, in last quarter, we have received the IT refund of approximately 90 crore. In international, we received the IT refund of 25 crore. And all together, the interest amount on these IT refunds for last quarter was 12.5 crore, which has been accounted for in last quarter, which has improved our PAT.
Fair. And second thing, as you have mentioned that generally our industry grew at 2x the times of GDP. However, based on my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, based on few previous quarters, it was said that the growth of the industry has declined and it is not 2x of GDP as a current trend. So just wanted to get a clarification. Let me
help your understanding. I said SIS is satisfied with 2x GDP growth.
Okay.
And I pointed out that for the last many quarters since listing, we have maintained an average revenue growth or a compounded annual revenue growth close to 15%. That is for SIS. That is what we want to achieve. Unless we grow a clip faster than industry, we don't pick up market share.
Fair point. And sir, as you said that it is a mix of volume and value growth, where value growth is exactly as you said, pro rata pass on. Wanted some understanding on color on the volume growth. I'm able to see in last 8 quarters, average addition on employees in security in India has been roughly around 8,000 per quarter addition. It can be going low to 4,000 and it can come back to 7,000 again, which was in the recent quarter. Any color on this, that how are you planning out to increase this 8,000 addition, increasing to 10, 15 based on the demand? Second was related to facility management only. In last 8 quarters, employees in facility management is around 82,300, 400 crores only. There was a dip, it is rising back again. So could you give some color on the volume side, where because we are employee driven business, if this grows, I would definitely see growth in my top line. So could you give some color on this?
I think, my friend, you're using the wrong yardstick to compute or forecast growth for SIS. Please note, SIS is not a staffing company. If you are trying to establish correlation between headcount and revenue, your numbers might not add up. That is because 30% of revenues in FM, for example, are outcome-based contracts, per square foot-based pricing. They are not really headcount linked. In security as well, take, for example, we protect revenue growth. We protect now, you know, is a, I'd say, ballpark 100, 120 crore business, but it generates close to 15 to 20% EBITDA. Now, for that 15%-20% EBITDA of 100 crore, let's say ballpark 20 crore that flows through into our PL every year, 5 crore every quarter, there is no headcount addition, zero headcount addition. Because WeProtect does not deal with manpower. It has alarms, monitoring, and response services. So my advice to you would be that the right metric to follow SIS's growth is basically revenue per branch that we record. It is not a staffing-like situation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this clarification. I'll definitely incorporate that in my understanding. Just wanted, as you have spoken about WeProtect, what was the quarterly installations for WeProtect in this quarter?
Quarterly installations for WeProtect this quarter would be, I'd say, 1,000-odd connections.
It has been the same run rate since last few quarters, right? If I'm not wrong.
No. It varies a lot. In the beginning of the year, it was almost 3,000 connections a quarter. Then it went down. When they book a new order, they will, you know, they in a single month, they have capacity to install more than 2,000 connections. So that's just WeProtect. But that, I'm not talking about only WeProtect. There's a lot of other contracts that SIS does, which have a ESAS component, like, you know, there is Caterpillar right now, or there is JCB. These contracts have a very large component of Vedanta in Udaipur, where we are providing drones, we are providing access control equipment, we are providing vehicles, we are providing a lot of other things which are not manpower, which also gets booked in revenue. So there is a difference, my friend, between staffing business, service business, solutioning business, and route-based solutioning business. Just like in a cash logistics company, you won't use headcount to compute number of revenue growth or whatever in a cash logistics environment. It varies. So a staffing company, headcount is the right metric. In a service company, it's headcount plus plus. In a solution company, it becomes headcount plus solution sold, equipment sold, you know, per square foot, outcome-based contract, et cetera. And then a route-based solution company like cash logistics or pest control, the metrics are stops per route.
Thank you. Thank you for this clarification. It was very helpful for me to understand it a little better. My next question is related to, in your initial comment, you have mentioned that international business has some seasonal better business in Q3. I would like to understand what is the seasonal effect in Q3, and the current margin levels of 3.8%, is it, I believe if that is seasonal benefit, it would be back to 3.5%. Is it the understanding correct?
This is not really, but I'd like Murali to answer that.
Sure. Thank you. This is Murali Krishna here. Thanks, Chirag. Thanks for the question. So, in the Southern Hemisphere, in Australia and New Zealand, there are quite a bit of events that do happen around the summer seasons and also around the holiday periods of December and January, right? So I have Christmas and New Year. What really happens is many of the businesses has some one-off things, seasonal things, not one-off, but which keep recurring every year. For instance, we have increased response on our monitoring side. We have increased response runs that we do. We do have security requirements for a lot of events, like, let's say, right now, you know, we're seeing Melbourne Cup is happening. We had the Australian Open that's happening right now. And also in New Zealand, there are a lot of events that happen, including cricket matches and conferences and so on and so forth as well. So these are usual businesses for us. We are pretty much into these businesses, and our margins are incorporated with, you know, a few losses in a few months and a few profits in a few months, and so on and so forth. So we continue to carry this thing. So the revenue increases substantially during this period of this quarter because of these events. But when it comes to margin, these are regular margin events. Some of them are good paying, some of them are not as much, so they even out. So the margin-wise, it's a stable margin. Revenue, we usually see a uptick in the quarter Q3, usually, in every year.
Fair point. Thank you for the clarification. My next question is related to cash logistics business. I was just looking at the P&L that you gave in your earnings report. I'm able to see over the quarters our EBITDA run rate has shot up on an absolute basis from 23-24 crores to almost 30 crores plus now. Just wanted to know, however, our PAT at this moment is still in that same range of 12-13 crores. So could you give some color on this?
I think.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, am I audible?
Yeah. You're asking about the cash logistics business, right?
Yes.
So there have been some adjustments in the cash logistics business, which are one-off, which is the reason why you see this discrepancy. We are actually in the process also of bringing on a limited audit from one of the Big Five, and they will be coming and taking over the audit for this company as it moves forward. So in that process, there have been some catch-up adjustments, etc., which will start showing up this quarter and next quarter. But otherwise, on a growth basis, the outlook for the cash business remains very strong. The margin profile of this business continues to be in the range of 17%, 18% ballpark, and we believe that 8% is the right PAT level that you should work with going forward, barring these quarterly movements. I think these are the three numbers, and obviously, the return profile of the business is upwards of 30%.
Chirag, one point I would like to add about the low-margin PAT is mainly because earlier we had a carry-forward loss, so there was zero PAT. Now that has been set off against the profit which we have earned. So there is a tax leverage. That's why the PAT remains the same. So benefit of carry-forward loss is not there in this quarter. That is why, and that has been mentioned in the earnings note also. If you can refer to the section which talks about the historical financial trends, that information is there also.
Sure, sure. Thank you. Thank you for this clarification. Just to stay on cash logistics business, as you said that the DRHP filing is in progress, is there any timeline for the same that we could keep in our mind that in a year or in a two-year timeframe that it can come?
Hopefully sooner, but we would not be able to comment on future events.
Just last question from my side. You have mentioned in your earnings report the cash flow conversion of your different all the segments. However, I'm able to see that cash flow conversion in security business, international and domestic, has been as per expectation of 100% plus. However, in facility management, it was way below the expectation. So what is the working capital that is getting stuck? Is it related to receivables, which is leading to lower cash conversion at this moment, which will get converted with time? Is it the case?
Yeah. Compared to Security India and Security International, the improvement in the working capital is not that much evident in facility because the collection is not as good as in other two segments. But in Q4, we are expecting that there will be good improvement, whatever information we have. So in Q4, you might see that there will be similar kind of OCF to EBITDA percentage for FSP also. One more thing is that there is no IT refund in FSP in last quarter. And in Security and International and Security India, both places, there was an IT refund. So that has also impacted this better OCF to EBITDA.
So just to supplement that response, I think for everybody to know, I think what SIS management is shooting for is 2x GDP growth, which is around about 15%. A return profile of higher than 15%. And an OCF to EBITDA in the range of 60-65%. So what you see this quarter is an exceptional OCF to EBITDA in Security and International, where the OCF to EBITDA is higher than 100%. This is not likely every quarter. This is not normal. This is a one-off event. What we can deliver as a fast-growing company is 60 to 65%. If you see historically, over the last 7 years, we have always delivered on average more than 50%. Now, as our base gets bigger, our growth is more subdued, we believe that this can move up to 60% plus. I hope that clarifies.
Right. Just to squeeze in last one, you have said that the minimum wage increase for the year was around 3%. And I missed the part where you said that pre-COVID, what was the average minimum wage increase?
8 to 9% between 2010 and 2020 pre-COVID.
Thank you for the answer.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya from Share India Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Great set of numbers on across the board. I had a couple of questions. One was regard to the international business. So we've done exceptionally well this quarter in terms of revenue growth. Structurally, can you just guide me into how things will pan out in the next two or three quarters in terms of strategically, how do we take EBITDA margins from the current level to say a 100 or 150 basis points higher? What our long-term target is?
This is Murli here. I will answer that question. The last quarter and the quarter before, that is the quarter that just ended and the quarter before, we have had some phenomenal wins, which we have reported in our reports as well. There was one win, a customer called Sydney Trains, which is upwards of 30 million, which is a sizable win for us. And we have also expanded our presence in defense segment, which will start kicking in, not immediately, but maybe a few quarters down the line. So revenue-wise, I think we are fairly well positioned. We have done a lot of groundwork with respect to our business developments and reorganizing our approach to the customers and whatnot. So that is, which we have done in the last 2 to 3 years, that is starting to pay results, pay dividends right now. And we are seeing them coming every quarter on. So, We are positioned very, very well with respect to the revenues. As Rituraj put up a little while ago, our international business, even pre-COVID levels, the margins were about 4.5%. And that's the more realistic number that one should consider as a target that should be accomplished. Now, we have, currently we are somewhere close to 4%. And the change of between here and there is largely due to the labor market conditions, very, very tight labor market conditions that we see in Australia and New Zealand as well, and in Singapore, all three markets together. So the labor market started to tighten post-COVID. We've been reporting that every quarter. And that the unemployment rate continues to remain at record low levels, sub 3.5%. And that's what is affecting us at this point in time. So we have expanded our efforts, focused efforts on recruitment and retention and so on. So while we are working towards getting there, again, there is that bit of market thing as well, which we need to look out for. As and when the market eases, we will surely kind of see the wave of moving back up that number.
Right. And just on the international front, how are we doing in Singapore? How's the Henderson business going? If you could substantiate with some numbers.
Right. If you look at the history of Henderson since COVID, the COVID had severely affected the business. Our immediate attention was to kind of get it to a self-sustainable level, which I think I'm very confident to say that we have achieved those levels at this point in time. So we are self-sustainable, and from here there will be a new phase of taking the business to its rightful place, which was pre-COVID, the way it was pre-COVID. But again, in Singapore, there are structural shifts that are happening to the labor market. You could look for what is called as a progressive wage model, where it is the concept of a minimum wage here in India, which is fairly similar but slightly different. The Singapore government publishes those rates fairly in advance. And that there are some structural shifts in those. So we have to maneuver those, and we also have to look at how the competition maneuvers those and so on and so forth. So there is a bit of work to do, to be able to grow from here to its rightful position, but I can confidently say that we have come to a position where we are self-sustainable.
Right, right. And lastly, wanted to get some sense on the new tech business, the WeProtect business and the likes of that. So there are two schools of thought. One is that eventually when WeProtect and the likes of those tech business grow and they become a sizable scale, obviously WeProtect is very small currently, but over a period of say 3 to 5 years, it grows higher. Could that be a cannibalization on your existing business, or is it more of a complement rather than a substitute? Because there are two schools of thought that if your WeProtect or the likes of that comes in, obviously your manpower goes down. So how do we look at it from a strategic perspective, say 5 years later, 3 to 5 years later?
Well, that's a great question. And I think at SIS, we don't see technology as a threat. We see technology as an accelerator. So we are doing two things. One, convert our services into solutions using tech. So, you know, greater use of cameras, greater use of apps, greater use of AI, video analytics, all of that, you know, is happening at one stage. The second area, you know, this is what you termed as complementary, you know, moving from service to solutions, where you're using technology in a complementary fashion. The second situation is where the manpower is being replaced by tech. You called it cannibalizing. I see it as a part of industry evolution. So there is a lot of services that we offer, like WeProtect, where we are effectively cannibalizing the static guard or the evolving the customer demand as we see it. For example, you know, there was a time, if I take you back 15, 20 years, every telecom tower used to have guards below it. Today, they are none. You know, it's completely done by electronic gadgets. Every ATM in the country had guards. Today, a large number of ATMs don't have guards. So this is market evolution. I believe that security manpower will stay where security is critical to the business operation. In a sugarcane factory where you have to get buggies to line up for 3 kilometers in the peak winter for crushing season, electronics cannot do that for you. You need manpower. In front of a cement plinth in a large industry, steel output, mine, definitely. But I am a firm believer that there is no reason why there should be a guard standing outside a restaurant to open the door and close the door. That is not critical to the operation of a restaurant, and such use of manpower is and should get eliminated. So if we can do that using tech, if we can, you know, instead of the guard sleeping outside the bank branch or the ATM at night, if you can remove the guard and use WeProtect to solve that problem, or, you know, when the restaurant closes down in the evening and nobody is supposed to enter or exit, if you can use that, do that with WeProtect, why do you put guards in the first place? So we don't see that as cannibalizing. We see that as evolving with the market. And as a market leader, it's our job to help the customer achieve its goals in the lowest cost fashion and the most effective fashion. So you may see it as cannibalizing. We see it as evolution. And if somebody is going to cannibalize the guard, it better be the market leader itself, which is SIS in this case.
Right, and that was very helpful.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to take questions from all participants in the conference, please restrict your questions to only 2 questions per participant. Should you have a follow-up questions, we request you to rejoin the queue. We have our next question from the line of Kaustubh Bubna from BMSPL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I have two questions. The first question is, could you give me some data points to explain the market opportunity in the international markets that SIS is operating in for security solutions?
Kaustav, this is Murali Krishna here. Sorry, could you repeat that question so that, you know, I get better?
Yeah, I wanted some data points to explain the market opportunity, the total addressable market and the upcoming market opportunity for the next few years in the international markets that SIS is operating in for security solutions.
Sure. Thank you, Kaustav. Ritesh, would you like to take that?
Yeah, I think you need to get a macro view of the security industry globally. But I think it's a very good question because people don't want to understand the business at that level generally. So security globally is a 200 billion plus industry. Out of this 200 billion plus industry, 60% continues to be manpower-centric services. All electronics, all tech included, 60% is still manpower-centric. If you look at this 60%, the manpower-centric business, you will see that the 10 largest players in the world, barring three, seven of them don't have any significant presence in Asia-Pac region. That is so because roughly 65% of the global industry still, you know, in terms of revenue, comes from Americas and Western Europe. So seven of the top 10 players focus on those markets. Asia-Pac, which was in 20 years back the smallest part of the global security market, is now the fastest growing and will become the second largest market for security business globally. At SIS, we believe that India is going to be the big growth engine of that market because of the size of the economy itself. If India is to become a 5 trillion, 7 trillion, 8 trillion economy, you know, the security industry in India also will become a very large and significant market. India also has an advantage in this region, historically, business-wise, export of manpower-wise, various ways. So we have, therefore, looked at building an international business that is focused on Asia-Pacific region. We operate three markets, Australia, which is the second largest market in Asia-Pac, New Zealand, which is an adjacent market, it's like an extension of Australia, and it made no sense to operate Australia and avoid New Zealand. Other than that, Singapore is a strategic market because we wanted, even as it's not very large in revenue size or quantum of opportunity, it is the hub for regional contracts, regional tenders. When Amazon does a regional security contract, it originates, the RFP originates from Singapore. Same for a lot of other manufacturing companies, a lot of other companies. When they do their Asia-Pac contracts, because the regional headquarters are in Singapore, Singapore becomes a very important market, so we entered this market. We believe that 5 years forward, by 2030, two things are extremely likely to happen. Number one, Asia-Pac will be a clear number two in terms of size of market, and it will also be the fastest growing part of the global security industry in geography terms. The second thing that is going to happen is that this market is also advancing more rapidly towards solutioning because of the nature proximity to China and the nature of technology, the cost effectiveness of technology. So it is not only growing very rapidly in market growth terms, but it's also growing very rapidly in knowledge terms. It's leapfrogging. So I believe that this market becomes extremely important. If you look at standalone, Australia is roughly $1.8 billion-$2.5 billion security market, and our businesses in Australia account for almost 20-25% of that market. So we have a very strong market position in Australia. We're not just number one, we are greater than 20% market share. Similarly, in New Zealand, we are in the top five. In Singapore, we are in the top five, but obviously the market opportunity is much smaller. So, you know, you might get a $50 million-$100 million business in New Zealand and a $50 million-$100 million business in Singapore. But I think there's a lot that we are learning in these markets that gets implemented back home in India. Like, for example, right now we are, you know, the new Noida International Airport that is in news in recent weeks. We have been working on pitching to the Noida Airport Authority about our aviation security experience in Australia and the best practices being imported to India, should we get the opportunity in Noida International Airport. So there's a lot of transfer of knowledge and technology that happens both ways. The systems we develop in India, for example, our video analytics platform, the machine learning that we have done for facial recognition and ANPR and a lot of those things, they are being commoditized and being sold in international markets for dollar rates. So there's a lot of back and forth, but I believe that Asia Pac is the future of the security industry globally. SIS is amongst the top 10 players in global security industry today, but it is also the largest player in the global security industry in APAC. So APAC is a market that we can clearly say that with roughly more than $1 billion of revenue, Aussie dollar terms, we are very well positioned for this key market.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that detailed answer. Just one last quick question. So just specific to the India market, what is and for security solutions, what is SIS's exposure to the residential space? Because, you know, you have all the in MMR region. Just as an example, obviously there are opportunities in each state and city, but you have these redevelopment projects coming up and which have already started in the MMR region. So logically, you know, these poor quality housing societies before redevelopment can become a little more structured and organized, so they could opt for better security solutions. So does SIS participate in that market, or that's not an opportunity for a company like us?
Residential is not a focus for us.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
We like to, you know, our focus is to work with corporates. There's a saying in SIS, you know, there's two things that determine stickiness of your contract. One is how critical it is to the business operation, and I already gave that example, whether it's a guard opening a door at a restaurant or, you know, it's somebody working at a sugarcane factory. The second thing is who your customer is. If you're working in the RWA, where there are 300 apartments and 300 customers, you know, there is lack of clarity as to who is the chairman next year and what his preferences are, and it's a very chaotic situation. The purchasing power-
Correct.
Decision
Yeah.
is also not very well organized. It's complicated. There's a lot of other factors that are beyond our control. Vis-a-vis, when you work with large corporates, multinationals, there's a proper procurement process. You know, they are picking basis quality, they are picking basis the right factors. So I think we are better placed to work in that space.
Okay, thanks. And if you could just let me squeeze in one quickly, what are you exactly doing to create value from your cash logistics business? Why is that? I mean, it may not. I personally feel like, why is that in our portfolio of services anyways?
Please request you to rejoin the queue. as there are several.
No, I can take that quick question. Yeah, and you can rejoin the queue if you have any more questions.
Okay, thanks. No, that's it. Thanks. That's the last question. If you could answer
the cash logistics business started off by the banks asking us to provide cash finance. SIS used to be providing security guards to banks. Then the bank said that, okay, we need some cameras. So we got into the cameras business. Then the bank said that, okay, aap cash finance bhi de sakte hain kya? Then we got into that business. That's how organically businesses evolve. You hold the customer's finger, you follow the customer's demand, and you learn how to do things. But way early in 2009-10, SIS recognized that cash logistics is not a security business. It is a logistics business.
Yeah.
So we went and found a partner in Prosegur. Prosegur is a global leader in this space.
Mm-hmm.
We have a joint venture running for 15 years. And now, because that joint venture company, our ownership is minority, 49%. Because that asset does not get captured in our books, it's not consolidated. You know, we had a belief that, you know, that value of that business is not being recognized simply because it's not rolled into our books. You know, standalone, that business has 135 crores of EBITDA. But
okay.
That doesn't get rolled into our EBITDA calculation.
Yeah.
So we had a IPO or a listing put option with our joint venture agreement, and we are exploring whether we can use that to A, monetize our value of our shareholding in that business, and number two, maybe even consider bringing back some of the proceeds towards further lowering our debt situation.
Excellent. Thank you so much for answering all these questions. Really gives some clarity. Thank you. Best of luck.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Shivam Saxena from ICICI Bank. Please go ahead.
Just one question. You said the wage hike.
Sorry to interrupt, sir. Maybe please request you to speak a little louder.
Yeah, you said the wage hike helps. Am I clear now?
Yes, sir. Go
ahead. Wage hike helps. So, any experience in the past, if the development commission comes and the wage hikes are there, so does it help in your business? Or now, government from of create the commission and then eventually the salary hikes will pass on to the private sector. So, will it help your business?
Minimum wage hike always helps our sector. So our pricing is based on minimum wages, statutory components, service charges, administrative charges, profit. So when the base changes, everything is linked to the minimum wage. So let's say minimum wage is 100 rupees. So the PF is charged at the rate of 12.5% of 100 rupees. ESI is charged as a percentage of that. Bonus is charged as a percentage of that. Our training charges, our supervision charges, admin charges are all a percentage of the minimum wage, which is 100 rupees in this case. If the government decides to increase minimum wage from 100 to 105, everything gets pro rata computed on 105. So there's a direct benefit, not in margin terms, but in absolute value terms to our EBITDA and our PAT. Obviously, our revenue in the first case.
So has it been in the earlier past, Seventh Pay Commission was implemented, was there benefit?
Seventh Pay Commission is for government employees, sir. It is not for minimum wage or...
I understand, but actually what happens generally, the salaries in the private sector also get revised.
Under the Central Labor Ministry and under the State Labor Ministries, there is a wage board which determines the minimum wages applicable in the state or in the central circle. That has not been done as yet. Whether the pay commission rise triggers that, I'm not sure. I hope you're right. But we have to wait for the gazette notification by central government, Ministry of Labour, and the state government's Ministry of Labour.
Okay. Thanks. And all the rest.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Amit Mendele from RoboCapital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions. The first question is on the broad M&A strategy. You know, in the past, you know, we have been pretty active and we've bought some assets on the M&A side. Now, going forward, a couple of things I just wanted to check. Whether we have any active pipeline for acquisition, number one, and number two, what type of multiples are we looking to, you know, any broad range? I understand that cannot be very specific, but is there a broad range that you can, you know, mention that this is the multiple at which we'll do acquisition deals? I'm asking this, you know, specifically because, you know, SIS, you know, is also, you know, our own multiples have dropped a little bit. So in that context, if you can comment, it will be helpful. Hello?
So let me take that. Okay.
So SIS growth is predominantly organic. You know, we don't acquire for growth. So that's the first thing you must understand. In the last 5 years, we haven't acquired anything because we haven't been confident of acquiring anything. Second point is, SIS has a track record of successful M&A. We have acquired more than 15 companies in India and overseas. Barring one, Henderson, others have played out more or less to plan. Number three, SIS does not acquisition. We acquire for strategic reasons. Maybe a certain geography, like I was giving the example of Singapore. Maybe, you know, in India, if you say Bangalore market is growing very rapidly, so, you know, we wanted more footprint there, so we acquired something. Maybe a customer segment like healthcare, we acquired Rare because of that. So we acquired for strategic reasons. We haven't acquired in the last 4 or 5 years because we were waiting for the first full year audited numbers without any COVID impact. 21 and 22 were impacted by COVID. 23, most people said, most sellers were of the view that they are still impacted by COVID. FY24 was the first year where people had a set of numbers where there was no COVID impact, positive or negative. So we have started looking at opportunities. We believe our balance sheet is in good shape now with our net debt to EBITDA at barely 1x. But rest assured, SIS is in no rush to acquire anything. We don't see acquisitions as a way of bringing faster growth. If and when we acquire, will be for strategic reasons. We do not acquire basis multiples. We do not believe that 6x is cheap and 12x is too expensive. Our thesis is very simple. The IRR of that deal in a base case scenario should be greater than 21%, and the IRR of the transaction should be better than 15% in a downside case scenario. If there's a transaction that meets that requirement and it's strategically useful, definitely we'll consider buying. Multiples is not the basic or the metric that we are too hinged upon. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Thanks for that. It's pretty useful. So just my second question is on the data. You know, just a follow up on the earlier point. Could you inform what is this size of the data pool that is beyond 6 months, and also if in any of it is disputed or anything at at risk of collection which is beyond 6 months.
Rajeshji.
Sorry, can you repeat your question, please?
Yeah, I was just looking to understand what is the amount of debtors that are beyond 6 months. Debtors due beyond 6 months, 180 days, number one. And out of that amount, what would be the amount that is currently disputed with the client or at the risk of collection, etc.?
Right now, I don't have a available figure for this. We'll get back to you. We'll provide you this information separately. Our IT will provide you this information separately.
That's it from us.
Yeah. So, hope that's okay.
Thank you. We have our last question for today from the line of Amit Sisodia, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Go ahead with the question.
Am I audible? Hello, am I audible?
Yes, Mr. Amit, you are audible. Please go ahead with the question.
My question is for Ritura, sir. I am invested in SIS since the IPO, and I have a few things to share. We are the number one security and number one facility management company in India, and we have significant overseas operations also. And since our listing, we have almost tripled our revenues, but we have failed to generate any returns for our shareholders. And I guess we must... introspect why the investment community has ignored us and our share price is still stagnating below IPO price. During my interactions with several investors, I found that there are few common reasons for the lack of confidence in SIS as an investment. So do we have the time to listen to those?
Absolutely.
Sir, the first doubt the investors have is why are we having such a huge debt when ours is an asset-light and high-cash generating business. The investors say that if the business would have been generating so much of cash, then we would not be carrying this much of debt. This was the first doubt that I commonly encounter. The second is, we are having almost 1,000 crores of cash, out of which 500 crores is in India and 500 crores is outside India. And they want to know what in which entity is this cash lying and why are not we using this cash to reduce our debt. The third common doubt that investors have is we are an asset-light company and still we have charged about 160 crores in depreciation in last 12 months. And this figure has been continuously rising over the last few years. This depreciation charge confuses the investors. Can you please explain the calculation of this depreciation in the simplest terms, so that even a layman can understand what we exactly, how we are charging this depreciation? And the last one is, sir, we would be generating around 600 crores of EBITDA, but 160 crores will go in interest payments, 160 crores will go in depreciation, and the resulting PAT would not be that significant, and which will again make our return ratios look poor, and P will optically look high, again discouraging the new investors. So these are the broadly four doubts that I find among the investors. So I want Ritula sir's comment on these pointers.
So, my dear sir, firstly, I would like to thank you for being so patient with SIS since you're an IPO investor. Second, my sincere apologies that SIS has not been able to generate the return that you and I both had hoped for, despite the fact that since IPO, our revenue has more than doubled, it's more 2.5 times, and our profit, our EBITDA, which was 200 crores, is now 600 crores. But the share price remains below the listing price. So I can understand your pain and I completely empathize with that. Now coming to the points that you raised, as far as the debt situation is concerned, I am aware that a lot of people have this concern. They are constantly comparing SIS to staffing companies. And their view is that why does SIS have working capital in the business? It's an asset-light business. Our belief in this industry is that 300,000 people working for SIS are our employees. Whether or not customer pays should not affect their pay date. They have to run families and homes. So working for SIS, SIS is accountable to pay their salaries. Staffing industry does not work like this. Their approach is different. Their approach is, when I collect from customer, then I will pay you. If the customer does not pay me for 2 months, I will not pay you for 2 months. So that is why there's capital employed in the business. All the debt that you see, barring maybe 50-100 crores, is working capital debt. If you see the earnings document, the earnings note that we release, we are probably the only company that spends writing 15 pages to explain all this in detail. There is a table that gives you a breakdown of debt and cash entity-wise. If you need any further clarification, I'll give you. But more important, I want to assure you that I also want to see what happens if we are able to pay down the debt majorly. Does that resolve the perception in the market that we have too much debt? But what we cannot do and what I would not want to do is to change the way we operate business. We cannot collect and then pay. We have to pay first our employees and then collect money. That's on the debt piece. But I'm with you. We will try and reduce the debt exposure in the business. Allow us some time. We are working on it. The second thing is the return profile of the company. Now, that is again because of the capital employed in the business. Because the working capital employed in the business is high, the return ratios look subdued. Once we address the debt component, hopefully the return ratios of this asset-light business should be and have been in the past in the range of 15% plus, 20% plus in fact. We will try and bring the business back to that stage. Number three, the depreciation breakdown. What exactly is the depreciation charge for? That breakdown, I will ask Brajesh to make. And now that you have pointed out, every quarter, Vineet and Shweta, the investor relations team, will put the depreciation calculation in the earnings report for you to see transparently.
Yeah, that would be.
We are an asset-light business. We are an asset-light business. The only assets that we buy are either making offices or buying equipment that customers want, cleaning machine, vehicles for patrolling, drones, alarm monitoring equipment, things like that we buy. Whatever depreciation we have, we will put a list for you to see where the depreciation charge is coming from. But in summary, I owe you an apology. I hope that you will bear with SIS a little bit longer. Hopefully, we will. I'm not sure about stock price. That's not in my control. But the points you've raised are very valid. Perception issues around debt, around return ratio, around depreciation. I will answer all these three through actions, and let's see what the stock market thinks.
Right. So I am invested and continue to invest regularly in SIS just because of your passion for the business and the way you answer, and you have every single minute detail of the operations. That is commendable, and I really respect you for that. Thank you, sir.
Sir, I'm sorry we are having this personal chat over a conference call, but you know, I did my first round of private equity investment from V. Shaw in 2007, and we gave them 7x return. My second round of private equity was CX Partners in 2012, we gave them 3x return. But I'm very sorry that, you know, my IPO investors, I've not been able to generate returns, and it disappoints me greatly as well. And you will see that this is not directly linked to the performance of the business. SIS revenue and profit say a different story, but let's see. We can only keep trying.
Sir, once this EBITDA translates into PAT, you will see magic happening with this stock price.
Hello, dekhte hain dost.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ritu Raj Sinha for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, everyone, for joining this call. I think this has been an exhaustive conversation. I appreciate all the questions that came through. As you can see, Q3 has been a good quarter with all engines firing. Security business in India, FM business in India, cash business in India, and international business. All four segments have delivered. This demonstrates what can happen when all engines fire. I know that for the past few quarters, we have had, you know, one or the other engine pulling us down. But I think as we proceed forward, we will try and see that we keep all businesses moving on track. Q4 looks like a good quarter, and I hope that we will also be able to address some of your major concerns in FY 25 and 26 about debt, return ratios, and the depreciation aspect. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you. On behalf of SIS Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.